Part 3. Sourcing and Suppliers. Chapter 11. The Invisible Part of the Business. Welcome back. So in part 2 we built the strategy. Which product, why differentiation matters before the first order, how timing quietly decides the rest. And at the end I promised you a hunt. The factories, the people who will actually make your product. Well, here we are. Here's the thing nobody tells you about sourcing. It doesn't feel like the exciting part. Strategy feels strategic. Sales feels like sales. Sourcing feels like procurement. Administrative, transactional, like filling in a form. It is not filling in a form. Sourcing is the moment your business stops being a plan and starts depending on other people. Manufacturers, trading companies, agents, logistics partners, all of them become fixed parts of your system. And here's the uncomfortable part. The significant chunk of the business that you built on spreadsheets and late-night research now executes at a factory in a city you may have never heard of, in a language you probably don't speak, by people who have their own interests, their own standards, and their own understanding of what "as discussed" means. As discussed. Two words that have caused more gray hairs in this industry than almost anything else. A supplier is not a service provider in the traditional sense. They don't just execute what you specify. They interpret requirements. They prioritize according to their own logic. They work within their own processes. What arrives at your warehouse depends not just on what you decided. It depends on how those decisions landed on the other side of the conversation. Most people underestimate this. A good price and fast responses feel convincing at the start. The factory replies within the hour. The profile looks clean. The samples look great. The math works. Everything is pointing at yes. And then production starts. And reality begins its edit. Because the real quality of a supplier doesn't show in initial contact, it shows in execution over time. And time has this habit of making weaknesses visible that were still charmingly packaged in that first conversation. So sourcing is not simply procurement. It's a management process, the people process, a communication process. People who underestimate it lose control over exactly the part of the business that's hardest to correct later. And that's precisely where the most expensive mistakes are made. Not at customs, not in the warehouse, in a decision made 3 months earlier, in a quiet room, when someone skipped the question they should have asked. So here's what part 3 is about. We're going to give you the map for this part of the journey. Where to find suppliers, how to tell a manufacturer from a trader, what a good factory actually looks like up close, and how to pick one that won't let you down. Not the first time, the third time. Because anyone can get lucky once. Let's start with the most fundamental question of all. Where on earth are you sourcing from?
Chapter 12. Procurement Markets Worldwide. Here's the thing about procurement markets. Whenever someone says, "I'm sourcing from Asia," I always want to ask which part. Asia is a large place, about 4 billion people large. Saying you source from Asia is roughly as precise as saying you source from Earth. The decision about where you source is a strategic one, not a geographic one. And it starts almost always with China. China. The answer everybody gives before they've asked the question. But here's what's actually true about China. It's not simply a factory, it's a system. In many industries, raw material processing, component manufacturing, assembly and shipping all sit within a few kilometers of each other. Networks that have grown over decades, mutually interdependent. A manufacturer in Shenzhen who needs a circuit board gets it the same day. A manufacturer two provinces away orders it and waits. That's the difference, not the factory, the system behind it. And product categories in China are always region-specific. Electronics in the Pearl River Delta, Shenzhen is the epicenter. Textiles in Guangzhou and Zhejiang. Yiwu for small goods and accessories. Furniture from Foshan. Footwear from Wenzhou. These aren't random distributions. They developed over decades because suppliers, specialists and testing labs settled around the core industry in each region. Someone who orders the same product from a manufacturer outside the right cluster doesn't just pay more. They lose the entire system advantage. Longer procurement paths, fewer options, less flexibility. The price may work, the structure behind it doesn't. So when does China not make sense? When costs have gotten too high for your product category. When geopolitical diversification matters. When a free trade agreement with your target market pulls you somewhere else. Enter Southeast Asia. Vietnam is currently the most developed market in the region. Low labor costs, political stability, and something strategically interesting. A free trade agreement with the EU, the EVFTA, in force since 2020, that progressively reduces import tariffs on many product categories to zero. What that means in practice? A product can cost more to produce in Vietnam than in China, and still land cheaper in the European market, because tariffs eat less. This effect is surprisingly often overlooked, and it goes straight to the margin. Vietnam shines for labor-intensive products. Textiles, simple consumer goods, furniture, a hoodie, a backpack, exactly where the cost advantage kicks in. Once products get more complex, electronics, lots of sourced components, the picture shifts. Most of those components still come from China anyway, and the advantage shrinks. Indonesia is further behind, but growing. Furniture, wood products, simple consumer goods. Real advantages if the production is less complex. More management overhead, less integrated supply chains, more variance in quality. It's not an inefficient market, it's a growing one. Which is a polite way of saying, eyes open, expectations calibrated. And then there's Europe, which people rule out immediately because of cost. That view is too narrow.
Proximity changes everything. An adjustment that takes weeks back and forth to China takes days in Europe. Errors are caught faster, regulations are already built in, and for heavily regulated products, or products that need many iterations, higher production costs can be offset by lower defect rates, faster time to market, and less capital tied up. Not always, but more often than most people think. Turkey and parts of Eastern Europe sit in a functional middle ground. Moderate costs, shorter lead times, easier communication. Textiles, furniture, metalworking, especially for seasonal products or fast reorders, that can make exactly the difference. So here's the one-line version. The decision doesn't hinge on the country, it hinges on the product. Labor-intensive products benefit from Vietnam. Resource-adjacent or simple products can work in Indonesia. Complex products often remain in China. Adaptation-intensive or regulated products work better in Europe. Time-critical products suit Turkey. Pick the wrong combination, and it rarely causes immediate failure. It almost always creates problems that nobody had on the list. China is the most complete system. Vietnam is the most efficient complement. Indonesia is a growing building block. Europe stands for control. Turkey for operational flexibility. People who understand this build their supply chain on logic. Those who ignore it optimize the wrong lever. And that lever usually only becomes visible when it's already too late.
Chapter 13. Platforms, where the search actually starts. For a lot of people, the supplier search begins on Alibaba.com. You open the site, type in your product, browse a few pages, send some messages. Feels structured, transparent, efficient. Almost too easy. Which is exactly what makes it dangerously comfortable. The problem isn't the platform, the problem is the expectation.
Alibaba.com, 1688, European B2B marketplaces. These are infrastructure. They lower the barrier to entry, reduce friction, make markets visible. A marketplace doesn't solve problems, it only shows options. People who confuse those two things have a very expensive education ahead of them. But let's be fair, Alibaba.com is genuinely powerful. It's the most important B2B platform for international buyers and has been for years. Communication in English, standardized processes, scalable inquiries. But beyond that, Alibaba.com is no longer just a supplier directory. The platform integrates AI directly into the sourcing process now, for search, communication, analysis. And alongside the main platform, Alibaba built something called Axio, which is a separate, more advanced AI-powered work environment for product discovery, supplier selection, and market analysis. What can it actually do? Upload a photo, a sketch, a data sheet, or just describe what you're looking for in plain language. Axio searches Alibaba.com, 1688, Taobao, and AliExpress simultaneously. Access to over 400 million products. It evaluates demand signals from Google Trends, Amazon Reviews, TikTok Trends. It scores niches by search volume, estimated margin, and competitive density. It auto-generates RFQs, compares suppliers by certifications and MOQs, and can support multi-round price negotiations with AI assistance. According to Alibaba, Axio automates around 70% of the most time-intensive steps in the sourcing process. Not the thinking, the tedious part. There is a difference. But Alibaba.com has limits, and the important ones are invisible until you trip over them.
The listed price is almost always a base price that excludes branding, packaging, certifications, or product customization. Once those items are added, the calculation shifts, sometimes by 20 to 40%. Verified supplier means Alibaba checked the business registration, not the production quality. And many sellers on the platform are not manufacturers at all. They're trading companies sitting between you and the factory. A real manufacturer has a clearly defined product focus. A seller listing kitchen appliances and auto parts and furniture is a catalog, not a factory. Use Alibaba correctly and you treat it as a starting point for research, not an end result. Make initial contacts, understand the price range, compare variants. The actual supplier evaluation begins after that. Now, 1688, also Alibaba's platform, but completely different. 1688 is China's leading domestic wholesale marketplace, optimized for the Chinese domestic market. Prices are often significantly lower because there's less internationalization overhead. But the barriers rise massively. Language, payment processing, communication, documentation, all dramatically harder than Alibaba.com. And the bigger issue, most sellers on 1688 produce for the Chinese domestic market. Export is not their core business or their competency. CE marking, EU packaging regulations, labeling in the target language, proper customs documentation. These are topics a manufacturer focused on the domestic market has simply never needed. You'll be doing a lot of teaching. And teaching, as any educator will tell you, costs time, energy, and usually money. 1688 is not a beginner's tool. It's for buyers who either speak Chinese, have a local presence, or work with agents. Those who enter without structure save on unit price and pay it back twice over somewhere else, a trade that rarely pays off. And then there are local alternatives, because Asia isn't always the right starting point. In Europe, restposten.de is a classic for surplus goods, returns, and overstock. Zentrada positions itself as Europe's major sourcing platform for consumer goods, with over 400,000 items. Wer liefert was, now part of the Alibaba Group, covers industrial suppliers and specialized production partners in the DACH region. Europages does the same across all of Europe. In the US, Thomasnet is the equivalent for industrial and technical sourcing.
Faire connects brands directly with retailers for curated ready-made products. Wholesale Central for quick regional assortment builds without overseas MOQs. Each of these solves a different problem. People who trade in surplus goods don't need a factory search. People who develop products don't need a surplus market. What matters isn't where you search, it's whether the platform fits your business model. The full platform landscape, the filter mechanics, the verification systems, exactly how to work XU for market research, that's its own substantial piece of the book. Here, just take the principle. Platforms are access. Strategy is yours to bring.
Chapter 14. Manufacturers, traders, and sourcing agencies. All right, you know where to look. Now let's talk about who you are actually talking to. Because in sourcing, manufacturers, trading agencies, and sourcing agencies are often lumped together, as if they all do basically the same job. They do not. They have completely different roles, different interests, and very different implications for what you can control. Those who don't cleanly separate these models build a supply chain they don't fully understand. And that sounds worse than it seems at first, until it becomes exactly that bad. The problem rarely shows up at the beginning. Prices seem plausible, communication works, the first production runs without major issues. It's only with increasing complexity, adjustments, quality problems, scaling, that the real structure becomes visible. And whether you are in control of it or just part of it. Model 1. Direct manufacturers. Working directly with a manufacturer offers the shortest path to production. Requirements can be aligned without intermediaries. Technical details clarified directly. No additional layer filtering or distorting information. Especially for private label or product development, every detail has a direct impact on the result. But here's the real challenge. A manufacturer doesn't provide structure. They expect it. They produce to specification, not to expectation. Terms like high quality or as discussed have no fixed value in production unless they are concretely defined. A product is requested with a certain material thickness, but not precisely defined. The manufacturer chooses a variant that makes sense to them, technically correct, not what you had in mind. The result isn't a defect, it's an interpretation. And interpretations add up, reliably. Direct manufacturer work means maximum control, but only if you're actually capable of exercising that control.
Model 2. Trading agencies. Trading agencies present themselves as sellers, not production partners. They purchase products bundle supply chains and sell it as a finished offering. The advantage is speed and simplicity. For trade goods, standard products, or opportunistic deals, genuinely efficient. No supply chain to build, no setup overhead. The disadvantage lies in what's behind the curtain. Prices include margins that aren't transparent. The manufacturer stays in the background. Your influence over production is limited. When everything runs smoothly, this doesn't matter. When something doesn't run smoothly, it matters all the more. Because you can't get to the problem directly. You get to the trader, who then goes to the manufacturer, who interprets the message and responds. By which point, 3 weeks have passed. And the answer is, no problem. Model 3. Sourcing agencies. These step in exactly where traders fall short. They don't sell products. They organize the entire procurement process, identifying manufacturers, comparing quotes, structuring communication, ensuring requirements are correctly implemented. The difference in function is important. A trader delivers a finished outcome. A sourcing agent intervenes in the process and makes it manageable. A product requires multiple adjustments, different materials, specific packaging specs. Without structured communication, misunderstandings arise fast. A sourcing agent consolidates these points, documents them, monitors implementation. The manufacturer receives clear instructions instead of room for interpretation. Sounds obvious. In practice, it's surprisingly rare.
The advantage is stability. Processes become more traceable, risks are identified earlier. The downside, additional dependency and additional costs. The quality of the outcome depends not just on the manufacturer, but on how well the agent works. An agent doesn't replace responsibility, they shift it. And then there's a fourth model. Some sourcing agencies go further and take on complete operational responsibility. Not just supplier search and communication, the entire workflow, product development through production and QC to shipment, in some cases warehousing, customs delivery. The difference from a classic sourcing agent is fundamental. A classic agent coordinates, a full ownership partner takes accountability. They put their name on the fact that goods arrive the way they were agreed upon. Quality problems, production delays, communication errors, these aren't passed on. They're resolved internally. For the client, the role changes completely. You provide product vision, target price, requirements, but you don't manage every individual step. That saves enormous amounts of time and operational effort, especially for companies that don't have and don't want to build their own team on the ground in Asia. The price for that is trust. Those who give up operational control need to be able to rely on the partner acting in their interest. An agency that promises full ownership, but itself just passes things along, is not a partner. It's a trader with better marketing. So here's the clean version. Manufacturers deliver execution. Trading agencies deliver outcomes. Sourcing agencies deliver structure. Ownership models deliver accountability. These distinctions aren't theoretical. They determine how a business actually functions. Whoever understands this logic can consciously decide how much control to retain and how much to hand off. Whoever ignores it works in a system they don't fully understand. And that's exactly where the problems arise that can no longer be cleanly corrected.
Chapter 15. Selecting the manufacturer in China. Here's a sentence worth sitting with. Selecting the manufacturer is the single most consequential decision in the entire import process. It determines product quality, delivery reliability, compliance capability, and ultimately the margin. Despite this, the decision is made surprisingly often on the basis of 3 Alibaba inquiries and a good gut feeling. That's roughly as reliable as making a hiring decision based on the applicant's photo. A good manufacturer solves problems before they arise. A bad manufacturer is the problem. The difference between the two can be identified systematically, if you know what to look for. First filter, experience with your target market. A supplier who has been exporting to Europe or the US for years understands the regulatory requirements, quality expectations, and cultural nuances of those markets. A manufacturer experienced in the European market knows what CE marking means in practice, which test reports are needed, what REACH-compliant material documentation looks like. They've been through those processes. They know the pitfalls. A manufacturer without that experience has to learn all of it from scratch, and the importer pays the tuition. On Alibaba.com, you can check target market experience before you even send a message. Company profiles show main export markets by percentage. Customer reviews show buyer origins. Listed certifications reveal which regulatory systems the manufacturer actually knows. One practical tip. In your first contact, ask a targeted question about the regulatory framework. Which EU directives apply to this product? And what test reports can you provide? The quality of that answer says more about real market experience than any self-description in the company profile. Second filter, company age. The minimum is 3 to 5 years, depending on the product category. This isn't arbitrary. It's a benchmark drawn from experience. Chinese production operations that have existed for fewer than 3 years are still in a phase where internal processes, quality management, and supply chains aren't stable yet. Turnover is high. Error rates are likewise. For electronics or complex certifications, push the minimum to 5 to 7 years. Third filter, internal QC. A professional factory has its own internal quality control at two levels. Incoming inspection of purchased materials before further processing, and inspection of production during and after manufacturing. Good factories can document these processes. Inspection protocols, incoming material reports, QC reports, scrap rates. If you ask about these and get no coherent answers, you have a clear indicator of immature processes. Any factory can claim they have QC. Here's how you actually check. Ask, what is your current scrap rate and what happens to scrap? A professional factory knows the number and has a defined process. An answer like very low or almost zero is not an answer. It's a warning sign. Every production has scrap. Those who deny it are not in control. Internal QC is the factory's immune system. It protects against the worst, but not against everything. Fourth filter, specialization. A supplier focused on one product category has deep expertise, specialized machinery, well-trained staff. A supplier who simultaneously offers bamboo products, metal goods, textiles, and electronics is almost certainly not a manufacturer. It's a trading company. One glance at the product range is usually enough. When a seller lists stainless steel kitchen appliances and LED lights and wooden cutting boards under one profile, that's a catalog of various factories under one roof, not production, shopping.
Fifth, communication quality. How a supplier responds to the first inquiry is one of the most telling indicators of what collaboration will look like later. Three dimensions. Speed. A professional manufacturer responds within 24 hours. Competence. The reply should be substantively solid. They name certifications, point out material options, break down the MOQ by variant. And the most telling dimension of all, follow-up questions. A good manufacturer asks questions on an initial inquiry. Which target market? What certifications are needed? Preferred packaging type? These questions show the manufacturer is engaging with the order, not blindly accepting it. A supplier who confirms everything immediately and has not a single question has either not read the inquiry or says yes to everything as long as an order comes in. Neither scenario ends well. Sixth, factory audit. A manufacturer who declines a factory audit, whether conducted by you or a third party, disqualifies themselves. There is no legitimate reason to refuse a factory inspection. We are very remote. We just had an audit from another customer. We can send you photos instead. None of these is acceptable. A serious manufacturer welcomes an audit because it builds trust, and you don't need to fly to China for the first one. Third-party inspection services, Asia Pro, SGS, TÜV Rheinland, Bureau Veritas, offer factory audits starting at approximately $250 to $500. The report tells you more than 6 months of email exchanges. Seventh, price versus quality, and why the cheapest can be the most expensive decision. The product that costs $2 less to buy saves $10,000 on an order of 5,000 units. Sounds clear. The counter calculation looks different. If the return rate rises 3%, that's direct refunds, shipping costs, customer service, negative reviews. If a batch causes a compliance violation due to substandard materials, you add recall costs, marketplace penalties, and in the worst case, liability claims. That initial $10,000 in savings will have been spent many times over by then.
A proven approach. Request quotes from at least 5 manufacturers against an identical specification. Drop the highest and the lowest. The average of the remaining gives you the realistic market price. Any supplier quoting significantly below that range is cutting corners somewhere. Your job is to find out where.
Not because you should never choose an affordable supplier, but because a strikingly low price demands a stress test. A supplier who makes no profit will either reduce quality or want to lose to customer. Neither is a desirable scenario. And one criterion that's easy to overlook. Does the manufacturer sell the same product under their own brand in your target market? If so, that's a problem. They're not just a production partner, they're a direct competitor. They know your purchase prices, your margins, your product specifications. There are documented cases of Chinese manufacturers using an importer's product development to place a nearly identical product on Amazon under their own brand, often at a lower price because the manufacturing margin is eliminated. Before entering a collaboration, run a simple search. Does this company have their own listings in my target market? Not an automatic deal breaker, but it requires an open consideration and clear contractual rules. Which brings us to something the book covers in considerable depth: NNN agreements, IP protection, tooling ownership. We go deep on all of that later, because once you're in production and haven't locked this down, your options narrow fast. And finally, a word about avoiding dependency. The selection process isn't concluded with the decision to work with one supplier. Exactly when a good collaboration begins, you should start laying the groundwork for not being trapped by it.
All product specifications, drawings, material details belong to you and must be documented in a way any other manufacturer could produce from them. Test reports and certifications must reside with you, not only with a supplier. Production tooling, molds, stamping tools, paid for by you but stored at the factory. Get this in a written contract. Ownership assigned to the importer. Obligation to return. No use for other customers without your consent. Once a year, do a brief scan for alternative suppliers, even when the existing relationship is stable. Send 2 or 3 inquiries to new manufacturers, compare prices and samples. This not only keeps your market knowledge current, it signals to the existing supplier that they're not without competition. That knowledge alone shifts the dynamic in your favor. Funny how that works. So that's the full map for sourcing. Where to look, which platform fits which model, who you are actually talking to, and how to systematically evaluate the people who will make your product. There's a lot of operational depth underneath each of these decisions. The full evaluation checklists, the QC frameworks, the Alibaba pre-qualification mechanics, the SOP I-score and what it actually signals, the payment structures that protect you, and how to use AI to adapt communication across cultural gaps. All of that is in the book, chapter by chapter, with the specifics you'll need when you're actually sitting across from a factory. Here you've got the principles, the logic that holds it all together. You now know how to find a supplier. Which means it's time for the next challenge. Because finding a great factory is only half the problem. The other half? Getting them to build exactly the thing you imagined. Not an interpretation of it, not their best guess at it. The actual thing. Which means specs, briefs, samples, the whole production preparation process that turns I have a supplier and the product idea into a real, manufacturable, compliant product. It's more work than it sounds. It's always more work than it sounds. See you in part 4.